Morning. You already know about this. I just included it for continuity's sake. You know that the 2009 campaign was preceded by a couple of years' worth of media that was possibly building something of a brand awareness, as you've heard in one of the earlier sessions. And then 2009 was the launch mid-year of the Home Test Kit website. So cost-effectiveness analysis, generically, it combines cost with effectiveness. You have to have some kind of a measurable outcome. And in this case, the outcome is fairly obviously cases of chlamydia treated. An intermediate outcome is the number of women who were tested. And I'm going to convert this to quality-adjusted life years for the purposes of comparison to other things. However, I do have to insert a caveat. A quality-adjusted life year is a time-dependent concept. You measure morbidity and times the amount of time it's incurred. It works out to about 1/3 quality per case of PID. I'll get into that in a moment. But what I'm showing you is not a dynamic transmission analysis that is time dependent. This is only the impact on the women themselves. This is preliminary. I have put some of these numbers into a transmission model, and the results look kind of consistent, but I don't have those results ready to share with you. So then you compare your intervention that you're studying, which in this case is I know, to some sort of an alternative. Sometimes you can do nothing. You know, you just assume that if there was no intervention, there would be nothing in its place. What I have done is I've compared it to clinic-based testing. For the women who ordered the web kit and submitted a specimen, if there had been no program, some proportion of those women would have sought testing, probably in a clinical setting on their own. And so I'll include some of those numbers. So the cost for I know included the cost of the 2009 ads themselves, cost of operating the campaign, which includes the cost for the test kits, the mailers, the processing of the tests that come back, notification of the women who test positive, as you've heard in the preceding sessions, maintaining the database, and then treatment for the women who do test positive. What I'm not including are the ad costs prior to the current campaign. So I'll show you what those costs were, but the ads that were expended before are not included directly. And for clinic-based testing, you would be facing the obvious, the cost of the clinic visit and testing, notification for the women who test positive, and then the cost of the treatment visit. So the outcomes, looking at cases of chlamydia treated through web orders, the comparison group is going to be cases of chlamydia that would be treated if those same women, again, had sought clinic-based testing at some rate, and I'm going to assume 45%. That is reasonable with the baseline and inline surveys. So we're assuming that 45% of the women who would have received, or who did home testing, might have sought clinical testing on their own. But then I'm going to vary that because we really don't know. And then the cases of chlamydia treated using the baseline and inline evaluation data. You know, there was a gap. The women who were aware of the campaign were more likely to have tested in the last year. And so some of that differential testing may have been women who went to the website, found where a clinic was, and then went to a clinic and got tested, even though they had the provision to order specimens on their own. And then the comparison would be, again, if this population of women in the catchment area of Metro and South had sought testing at whatever rate they would have otherwise had the campaign not been there. I'm going to refer to that as the population effect in subsequent slides just for brevity purposes. So the population and chlamydia and gonorrhea positivity. These numbers are a little bit different. I'm using the same numbers, but I've looked at them in a slightly different way. So there were 1,286 women who were tested. But 1,350 returned kits, and you heard that there was the 5% that couldn't be tested. So 1,350 returned, 1,286 testable. What I did is I took 45%, I said that the comparison group would be 45% testing. Of the 1,350, I figured if a woman sent the test back, then that is a reasonable population to look at for comparison purposes. And then I get 113 positive. The fine print explains the difference between the 108 and the 113. Basically, I'm just attributing 8.4% positivity to the other women who had untestable specimens. If I go through this too quickly and you want clarification, then contact me later. I can explain where all of the numbers come from. I'm trying to make it not quite as much of a black box. And then so you'd end up with 84% of the cases in this population of women being treated with I know versus 41% for those in the clinic. So you have about twice as much treatment with women under the I know arm. The costs, the formative work, which includes focus groups and development of the current ads, Setting up, doing the lab verification studies that John Papp told you about is about $469,000. The media costs for development of the ads that were used this year that mentioned the home testing website, about another $460,000. Testing costs, which includes all costs associated with the maintenance of the website, processing the specimens and getting the answers posted, about almost $200,000, and then the treatment costs $5,900. Under the Quantic Arms, you're looking at 600 women who would see testing. You'd spend about $43,000 for their clinic visits and $2,800 for treatment. The staff cost for maintaining the website is somewhat fuzzy because there was so much variability in terms of web traffic. I mean, you can assume that they were spending more time in July and less time in October. So I think $138,000 to $198,000 is reasonable for the testing costs. Some of the costs that I just showed you, though, are sort of fixed costs, like the formative work, the focus groups to determine messages, and then some of this $460,000 relates to things like writing the scripts, doing the production. If you were going to use the same ads over again, you would not incur those costs again. And Harlan made me promise I would show you the Yosei lip balm. They were distributing condom keychains and things like this. So this stuff, much of it was consumed prior to 2009. So those costs are up here, but they're not included in the costs I'm going to show you subsequently. So just looking at testing and treatment costs, you're looking at about $112 to $159 per testable specimen with iKnow and $75 per patient for the clinic. Now most of that additional cost is devoted to maintaining the website. So if you get rid of the advertising costs, then the cost drops down a little bit. And then the additional cost, this will be cost for PID. I'm assuming that 15% of women who are not treated for chlamydia would develop pelvic inflammatory disease and incur certain costs. 5% of those who are treated would develop them. And then there's some patient costs as well. Here is what it looks like as it stands now. 100 infections treated with iKnow, 47.6 for the clinic-based comparison group. A little bit of a quality difference. Here's the number I want to focus on, $696,000 per quality. This is rather high if you've looked at cost-effectiveness analyses. I'll show you some comparisons later. But when you're looking at running a business, and the illustration I've used is if you wanted to be a pizza franchisee, you buy the land, you build the building, you put in the ovens, you hire the drivers. Your first month's worth of pizzas, if you average out all of those costs over your first months of business, you might be spending $600,000 per pizza. On an ongoing basis, you hope that the cost drops because some of the costs are incurred initially. So what I'm going to show you are a few sensitivity analyses. And the first one is, I'm going to look at variable clinic screening rates for the comparison group. Is it 0%? Are you really reaching people who would not be tested otherwise under any circumstances? Or is it 100%? Are you reaching people who would have gone to the clinic, but now they just submit the web specimens because it's easier that way? And so going forward, I'm going to look at a similarly effective media campaign with no fixed costs. If you did repeat media buys, it's very intriguing that some of the types of advertising were cited as the way that people found out about the campaign, such as the bus placards. Could you just spend money to put more interior and exterior bus ads without actually doing reshooting and changing them around a lot? And then the population effect I mentioned earlier is that some of the higher percentage among the people who were aware of the iKnow campaign may have been attributable to the iKnow campaign. The population for this comparison, you're looking at the Latina and African American women in Metro and South, 18 to 25 years of age, and that's about 98,000 people. So the 63% of them who knew about the campaign had more women likely to test in the last year. So if you take the fixed costs out, that's the formative work, that's the production cost for the media, the quality saved for iKnow versus clinic testing is still the same. The cost for quality drops by about two-thirds right away. So most of the cost I showed you earlier, that $696,000, was attributable to the fixed costs. Well, what if you are reaching the women who would not otherwise have been screened? The screening for the comparison group would be zero. Then the cost is about $137,000 to $157,000 per quality. And then if you're reaching people who would definitely be screening, they formerly went to the clinic and now they send in their specimens on the web, well then because there's the 5% spoilage rate, some people send in their specimens and they don't put the label on the transport tube, or the package breaks open and leaks or something. Not that it would leak out into the media. It leaks within the package and it can't be tested. Then the clinic intervention is cost saving. For comparison purposes, well, I'll show you that in a moment. Now let's look at the population effect, the increase in testing in the catchment area. This is what I showed you before. We're assuming that none of the additional women who were aware of the campaign and had been tested in the last year had done so because of the campaign. And then you're still left with not much. If 25% of the women who were aware of the campaign had been tested at a clinical site because of it, then you're at $144,000 to $163,000 per quality. And you see as it goes down, if 75% of those, this would be about 5,000 women in the catchment areas if they had tested because of the campaign, you're at $73,000 to $79,000 per quality. And 75%, because of p-values, that is still something that would be plausible given the baseline and end-line surveys. It would be possible that you could get those results and you would have that kind of differential testing rate. The pink stuff, if you add the fixed cost back in, that roughly doubles the cost per quality when you're trying to make some sort of population-based attribution. Here are the comparisons. The WHO for adjusted life years indicates that if an intervention costs about 1x per capita GDP per quality or per dolly, it's highly cost-effective, and 3x per capita GDP is cost-effective. Well, 3x per capita GDP for the Los Angeles area is, I believe, about $130,000 per quality. So what I was showing you before, numbers ranging from 73,000 to 700,000. Here are some comparison other interventions. HPV vaccination in men, about 442,000 per quality. Meningococcal vaccination of adolescents, 88 to 180. Clinic-based chlamydia screening of women, studies have shown 2.4 to 37,000. Some show more. There's a study in the UK that shows quite a bit more with older women. And cholesterol screening, 38 to 184. So the numbers I showed you earlier for INO fit into this. If you omit the test or the advertising costs, it's about $38,000 per quality, but then the advertising is what generated the traffic to the website, so you can't completely cut it to zero, but that gives you an idea of what's causing the cost difference. So the INO campaign development costs were substantial. The ongoing variable costs do seem to be a little bit higher than those for clinic-based testing, but the cost acceptability of this may depend on the extent to which the I Know campaign reaches people who would otherwise not seek care. Now, you can bring them in to the web, through the web, you can bring them into a clinic, but if you wouldn't be bringing them in otherwise, and you look at other interventions to reach such women, there are things like mobile testing, I'm not including any of those cost numbers. Some of those types of interventions can be very expensive. On the other hand, the ones that you can find in a setting like a jail, you can screen them relatively cheaply because they're already there and they're getting a health screening. So these results are preliminary, they don't include transmission effects. INO may have generated visits to clinics for screening, as you've been hearing all morning. The extent to this is somewhat unknown. And there may be economies of scale here. When things ramp up to the production facility of Harlan's Future, you may have enough volume that the amount of labor required to maintain the website goes up somewhat, but it doesn't go up as fast as the orders. Lots of things have economies of scale. If you're doing it for just a few people, it's very expensive. If you do it for a lot, it's less expensive. And an analysis of testing volume versus the different types of media may help identify the most cost-effective forms of media. You know, the bus ads versus the TV ads. Everybody had seen the TV ads, but everybody said the bus ads are how they found out about the campaign. I think that's very interesting. And then the cost effectiveness always depends on the alternatives chosen. I showed you clinical-based screening, but then there are other opportunities to reach women who don't access clinics and things such as mobile testing. There have been some cost effectiveness studies done of things like that in the past. And Jorge and Harlan provided all of the data that I used in this presentation. My contact information is there if you have any questions about anything that I showed you or you want a further explanation of where the numbers came from. Thank you.
How much the kids cost, and how, for all of them, I guess, is it sustainable? How much
roughly $7.12 per kit. Yes. And then the processing of the specimens once they come back is about $17.50. Those are the internal numbers for LA County that I was given. And I was assuming that for women who are tested in a clinic, it would be $19.50 per specimen because I was adding on some money for a courier to get it down to the lab.
We're going to keep going with it. And actually, we're looking at other ways to get the message to the target that are lower cost. One of those is through the use of public buildings throughout that target area that serve that group, both on the inside of those public buildings and outside, like the social services, child family welfare. You know, there are many different parks, recreation centers where we can advertise, where the only cost is the placement of the materials, not the running of the media. Yeah. Harlan?
Just I just wanted to say one of these. As Dr. said, the kit itself is not very expensive, and those costs include the postage for the mail. We want to make this completely, you know, there's no barrier to the client. So a lot of the costs and important costs, as Dr. Clay showed, have to do with how you're promoting. And we are using these, you know, sort of lower cost promotional methods, just getting materials in schools, getting materials at public assistance sites, getting materials at DCFS, Department of Families and Children. If we can be successful promoting, and if we can just do some elbow grease with publicity, like Marie Claire thing, like a lot of the articles, if we can do that, then the kit costs themselves are not so great. The other issue with the sustainability is the economic damage in our lab costs, and that's, you know, those are larger forces that we have to have people allow for.
But the website's been built, so all of the information that a person needs is there, and we just want to figure out other ways to take it to them.
So I think it's great to see this kind of happened and kind of replicated from what Charlotte had been doing in Baltimore. And I think the results are pretty similar as far as the yield is concerned and some of the costs are. So my question really is, for this to be sustainable, I think that we reach people that we might otherwise not reach, even though I think the overall volume that we get from this vis-a-vis, you know, regular clinic testing is going to probably be small. But I'm just wondering, if we are sort of going forward with this, does this really need to be replicated time and time and time again in Chicago, New York, in San Francisco, in Seattle, where in principle this is a web-based type of intervention that could actually be utilized everywhere? You would have to have laboratories that you could sort of send your specimens to, but I think other jurisdictions could really utilize something like this. For example, I mean, this is just our own example when we sort of started to think about this. We actually linked up, we were in Denver, we linked up to Charlotte in Baltimore and had our people basically ship the specimens to Charlotte. We ran a couple of radio ads, and I think we had a quite similar kind of volume as a result of that at rather limited cost. Even there, the costs were still substantial. But, so I'm just wondering whether, when we think about scaling up these types of interventions, why we cannot really use the kind of stuff that's already there and use the uniqueness of the internet in sort of a more centralized kind of way.
George, you want to respond?
All of the,
but, you know, most of the jurisdictions don't. don't have $1 million to develop their own bread. And I would argue that you could actually use the platform of a certain sort of site that you could give a different skin, a different sort of look and feel that actually could.
That's exactly what I was going to say. On the back end, it's all the same.
Yeah.
So it's about requisitioning and resulting, and then building it such that it fits for the population you're going to target. So you got to have that in place. And this can be adapted for about $8,000 to any other area, that ability to the website to requisition and result. And then the imagery and all of the social marketing, it has only a certain length of shelf life. And then it has to be kind of be refreshed. So, I mean, it's quite possible to do this. And I think another thing the STICTG, Clinical Trials Group, is trying to do is so that this validation becomes unnecessary, that it is validated, the test. But until then, we have the services of CDC, John Papp, to help roll it out for other areas. Yes?
I'm just wondering, have you given any thought
Harlan, George.
Our experience with texting is that it works well as a component of the service, but it doesn't work well as a way to get people to get to the website or a way to get more information. We had in earlier inceptions of the campaign had a texting feature and spent I think well over $10,000, $20,000, and I think we had all of 10 or less people actually use it. But it seems to work well as a component of this, for example, letting them know that the results are ready and they just need to go online and get the results. But in terms of ordering a kit, texting doesn't seem to work well. But we don't expect it to, given our past experience.
I mean, I was very impressed by the Haiti thing. We make it so easy to use your phone. But our thing, I mean, part of what made that work is that you just have to text in the short code and it's automatically done, is attached to your phone bill. That's what made that work, is it was already linked to another, like all your information is there, your billing information is there. We have to collect some information and send out a kit. So it's a little more complicated. I was kind of, you know, there's been so much excitement about texting, and we were excited about texting. When you look at the actual people who just chose to get their notification by text, it was relatively small. So, but I think we have to, like, look as hard as we can and see what is the actual utility for this. And we're also exploring, like, people getting
interactive
results.
Yeah. Carolyn.
Yeah, I was wondering, just to kind of follow up on that sustainability, is there any social marketing kind of data, like, on how you would do the periodicity that you would have to, like, hit, like, new bus ads, things like that? Because it seems like there's a half, you know, there's a half-life to how long one works.
I think there's a certain amount of habituation to ads. I think what I've seen from my experience, exposures of 7 ± 2, you start to get habituated to something. I didn't show the average exposure data, but it's about that at this point. It's about 8 to 10 exposures, roughly. So at this time, it would be time to sort of refresh the ads. But I think we're going to go on inertia for now.
Yeah.
As far as clinic visits and if this increased clinic visits, did your visits or testing numbers at the clinics in the catchment areas stay stable during this time, or were you already at capacity? So I'm just wondering if there was any room for any more visits.
We are at capacity. Although we're also implementing a way that walk-ins can be screened, kind of a fast-track system. Also in the area, there's fewer clinical services. We have a map I showed, kind of tried to show that. And we have public-private partners. So we don't really know exactly how much may have been driven there based on the campaign for screening and testing. Dan?
Great presentation, Bill. I'm just curious if you could look in the future and say, what do you think of this same strategy being used for MSM? And what will it take?
Why do you should ask?
Why do you should ask? That was not a plan.
Well, actually, we hope to develop a home test collection kit. And we have another campaign that we developed around the same time, reallycheckyourself.org, which is an MSM campaign around syphilis awareness and, you know, sort of some of the same goals and to increase testing. But we would like to use a develop a home collection system that would allow rectal urethral CTGC and finger stick whole blood HIV test as well. And the technology isn't quite there for syphilis screening, but that would be the ideal MSM package. You know, part of this also is like we've lost 36 STD clinics. We had 36 STD clinics in 1996. We're down to 12. We're going through another 5 and 10% curtailment exercise. So in the way I kind of looked at this desperately to get it up, get it running as an, you know, a cyber alternative to the brick and mortar testing opportunities we're losing. And if this would be something that could be taken to the target. And I think another big thing is not just marketing it, but now going into the high-risk communities through the schools, through the teachers, you know, where we directly market, where they don't have to order it necessarily, but they just send it in and then they go in online to get the result.
I just want to add one thing to that. We're planning to do this, which I kind of was just saying, but we're also doing the same thing that we can offer all of you. Like we sort of put a lot of development costs into the women's site. Now we can just take that and port that over to our MSM site, the Real Check Yourself site,
And we'd be glad to make this available to any other area that would like to adapt it, either the web part of it, and of course working with CDC to validate it. But figuring out, you have to figure out where your clinic is and your health department. So you got to have a lab on board, a health department, and some plan. But we're glad to work with you. We'll stop here. We'll be up here if anyone has any other questions. But thank you very much.